Well, good morning to you all from Las Vegas, Nevada, where it only everything happens in Vegas, stays in Vegas, including your money. Yep, this is me, Andrew Fetter, your host, When Pigs Fly, because it's straight to the point. There is no bull here, and I'm going to get to some issues of today. One of which I wanted to get into, which I pad posted, which I will get into, which is spiritual responsibility, which I believe is a very essence to our situation as far as our reasonings and as far as healings, and it involves our politics, it involves our religious aspects, it involves our day-to-day situations, it deals with our karmic events. But before I get into that very esoteric and existential-like talk, I want to get into an issue of manner of political sense here. And it's a few people have responded and realized the day-to-day events regarding our illustrious, I think he thinks he's our king, King Bush here. I know we had a King George over 200 years ago, and what happened to him, but it seems that George Bush still back at it again. And so I just want to list the things, the word that people do not like to talk about, and now they're talking about more and more, and I've even heard some even Republicans even talk about, including Mr. Senator Hagel. The word is impeachment. Now, you know what I find very hypocritical, and it sort of bothers me? I remember back in the days, oh, God, that President Clinton, and how they brought these charges because he lied about his illustrious affair outside his marriage with Monica Lewinsky. Oh, my God, he lied about, getting his thing taken care of. Well, that was a reason for impeachment. That's high crimes and misdemeanors. Well, I find it very interesting and quite hypocritical, and I believe if that is so bad, then what is, let's say, list of the things that have Mr. George W. Bush has created and done. And what would that be of high crimes and misdemeanors? And let's get the very essence. Let's list just a few, you know, we get really quick to the ones and everybody knows about. Let's say about the war, the Iraq war. How did we get into that Iraq war? Well, we were told that he had convincing evidence. First of all, this is right after, obviously after 9/11, that he showed a link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, which we know now is a lie, and a fabricated lie. He told us that there was weapons of mass destruction. He was producing chemicals. Another lie, another fabrication. And that's verified. Even in his own intelligence, he was picking and choosing and only disclosing even to the Senate itself and to the Congress. And, of course, the Republicans would just follow rank and file. Whatever he said would go. And then there was, they were trying to buy nuclear, uranium, develop nuclear weapons. And it was the old, I remember Condoleezza Rice referring to the, we'll be having mushrooms flying around if we don't take care of the situation, basically. And that was a lie. In fact, it was such a lie that they even had to discredit, which I'll get into again, with a Ambassador Wilson's wife, who was sent there by the CIA to Niger to find out if he was truly trying to buy uranium or yellow cake to develop nuclear weapons. Of course, we found that to be a lie as well. And all these lies to get into a war in Iraq, which now have over 3,000 of our soldiers alone have been died. How many thousands injured or wounded? And when and how many of those, they don't even say the amount of injured, where they're almost like their whole life has been basically, you know, not you know, affected, losing limbs, eyesight, heart, even psychological events. You know, what they call it, war shock or shell shock. There's all kinds of terms. I'm not even talking about the Iraqi people who've been decimated. The thousands have been killed. And what was us all for? It was based upon a lie. So based on Clinton's lie, it was really a situation with his wife. And nobody died from it. Nobody got hurt from it. But Bush's lie, thousands of people died. In fact, more people died, more of our soldiers died now to his lie than 9/11 already. So, and then I'm talking to the soldiers alone. So there's one reason for impeachment, fabrication and lies. And by the way, that was also, if you read about the famous Downing Street memo, which concurs on that very issue that, yes, he was indeed trying to fabricate the evidence, and I can go on and on, and it couldn't be substantiated, and the facts are out there. And the next item of reason for impeachment, it's called FICA. Now, what is FICA? Foreign Intelligence. It was the Foreign Intelligence Act. It was basically brought out to set up. It was after Nixon had used the CIA and intelligence methodology to spy on Americans at his own discretion, his executive decision. So basically, can spy on what he says is his foreign enemy, but it's really our domestic people living here, and he would utilize that, breaking our civil rights and using that information to try to basically undermine the credibility of those individuals. And so that was put in effect, basically, for the president. So what is FISA? FISA basically was set up to have a court, and it was called a secret court. The secret court basically, in a sense, was a framework so that there would be oversight for if the president decided to initiate some surveillance on somebody domestically. And they'd get, you know, they'd go, hey, we want to spy on this person. He lives here in the U.S. Boom. Okay. And then there was an order in there, placed into the order, where in a time of war, he even could go retroactive. He can go ahead and spy, just as long as he brought it back and showed, hey, you're within 72 hours. And they even give him further extensions, even up to a week, to do this. But, of course, Bush broke that many times. He even admitted it. In fact, before he admitted it, he first said that it was against the law to do what he said he was, then later on, several years later, admitted doing. So there, he broke another law, another high crimes and misdemeanors, spying on individuals, breaking FISA. And by the way, each act of FISA is, I believe, 5 years in jail and $5,000 fine. Second one, as I had previously mentioned, was the situation of Valerie Plame, the secret operative who was wife to Joe Wilson, who was an ambassador, and basically outing us operative for political reasons, for trying to discredit a person who went against his frame, who didn't agree to his ideas, or actually was telling what's going on, that somebody was lying, like Bush was lying about the information that he was the person who was disclosing. You know, some of those people, we usually call them heroes, who would do that and showing what's going on. So what did Bush do? He outed a CIA operative. You don't say it's him, but he's the one who, him and Roe, they're all part of that whole situation. And you know, we found out that information during the Libby trials. It was basically under Cheney, who was basically Bush. So there's high crimes and misdemeanors already going with that, treason. I mean, what is more treasonable than outing a CIA operative? In fact, she was one of the heads of, now that we find out, part of the denuclearization of weaponology within the Middle East. and she was very embedded with, had embedded information, in particular with Iran, ironically. So that sort of messed that thing up. So, treason. That's another one that I believe it's a treasonable offense. Now, the other one, which is, I believe it's a crime and misdemeanor, is the word called malfeasance. If you're head of a corporation and you disastrously destroy a corporation just out of your own incompetence, where you bankrupt the company, where you almost destroy the company, and you do it almost purposely because you don't have little regard, not just your incompetence, but you have little regard because you know what's going on. And you hire somebody to be part of who's head of FEMA, only out of a situation of cronyism. So, and I'm referring to the Katrina situation. That's called malfeasance. Malfeasance of his office. The disaster that occurred, how long, not prepared since 9/11. A disaster that happened in 9/11, we should have been on guard, ready for God forbid, another one, according to him. But in the reverse, not only weren't they prepared, they didn't have nothing happening, and all those people who suffered for it. I mean, look at what happened in the South. I mean, that was a disaster for being one of the richest, powerful nations on this planet. So that's the other one, malfeasance. And now the next one, which is now opening up another can of worms, and I just wonder if this is called, if it's called obstruction of justice, because we don't know all the facts yet, but as you know, when you shake the water and then you stop shaking the water, you know, from the dirty water, after it stops shaking a lot, it starts, you know, permeating up and you can see what's the dirt and what's really the water. And I think that's starting happening with the situation with the U.S. attorney firings. You know, and if you don't know that's what's happening with that, it's basically there's several U.S. attorneys who were indiscriminately fired, not for their performance, but out of politics. And what was really interesting, they fired basically the best U.S. attorneys, and what's really ironic about it, they are all placed there by his own hand, and who happen to be Republicans, and who happen to be, oh yeah, they're investigating corruption cases amongst Republicans. In fact, there's a famous one, her name is Lamb, and you can check her out. She was in San Diego, and one of the biggest corruption cases exposed, I mean, gosh, she would be employee of the year catching Duke Cunningham. If she was like a cop who just busted the biggest drug dealer in the country and exposed this massive corruption that he was creating. I mean, millions and millions of dollars. And by the way, she was from from Duke Cunningham's conviction, exposed several other individuals who she was intending to pursue and prosecute. And then she was fired. So there's a question there, her pursuing, prosecuting these individuals, is that obstruction of justice? Well, we don't know that. We'll probably find it soon, unless they try to cover that up. So that's just a little air of the possibilities, and I believe there are articles of impeachment. And what is our impeachment? Impeachment just doesn't mean you're kicked, fired, for you being president. People don't understand what impeachment is. Impeachment is a trial. The Congress votes in the impeachment trial, and the Senate acts as the jury and make their decision if he's innocent or guilty. Impeachment doesn't mean you're impeached, that means you're guilty. Impeachment means you're being placed upon, like, you're being indicted, basically, as a president, because a president can't be brought in before a judge. He can only be brought in under the impeachment acts. And only after, out of his presidency, could he be prosecuted. So basically, the prosecution starts out with, like, the grand jury would be, let's say, the Congress, and they vote in for the impeachment, like they did with Clinton. And then, of course, in the jury, being the Senate, said he was innocent because they didn't vote him being guilty. So there are reasons to initiate an impeachment. Just a word of thought. And I know time is lacking, but it is a maybe a quagmire as far as politically, but it is a responsibility. And even though it's 2 years short time, some people think, oh, well, there's only 2 years left. What's going to happen with that? Well, maybe it'd be an example for the future so no other president does this again. Because we are a nation of law, not a nation of men. As one person had once said. And now I want to get into the GOP, because I find it also ironically hypocritical. They walk in rank and file with their Republicans. It's real interesting watching, and I don't like saying this team, that team, because I always talk about the prison planet, but it's sort of interesting how amongst Democrats, they all have their own minds. It's sort of funny that they all say what they believe in, and you know, and I hear a lot of ridicule from Republican and conservative pundits saying, oh my God, look at, they're all going at each other. That's because they're individual. They're not rank and file. They're not going to say, oh, this guy said something, so we're going to go blind and follow the leader like blind mice. They have their own minds. We are individual. This is what makes us Americans. We have, it was the individuality of ourselves, you know, as away from the communist or totalitarianism of other societies. And yet, I'm watching, even our own Senator Ensign and all the ones who I've seen who vote rank and file like Republicans to whatever Bush would say. And there's a select few who actually do stand up against it. So I'm not throwing them all in the ballpark. And I do see some pundits question Bush's actions. But the majority of the GOP goes rank and file. Look at the vote on what happened. The people wanted in the last election to just begin a chain of events because they did not like the situation in the Iraq war, why we're in there, and why our troops are consistently dying, and why it keeps on continuing. We had like, I don't remember the exact number, I believe it was like 68 of this month alone. I may be wrong about that, but I mean, that's a significant amount of people. How many people of our own, how many of our own soldiers are dying every day? How many Iraqis are still being blown up? They're already in the midst of a civil war. Why do we need to continue and police a civil war? If they want to shoot and kill themselves, oh well, let them do it. That's their prerogative, that's their choice, which is another thing, you know? So, my question is, what is the GOP? You know, it's sort of funny because the GOP, the Republicans, consistently say that they're like God's party. And they try to present that they're the moral, the morality, you know, they're the true moral party, that they represent morality, that they represent fiscal responsibility. They represent security. You know, it's always, you have to look at a deck of cards, and you put the card in front of you, and you hold it, and it's pretty thick looking straight ahead, but when you turn around and you see how thin it is, that's how much GOP holds their truthfulness and their integrity regarding those values. I mean, were they moral? Are they moral in justifying to get us into a war that we didn't belong in? Are they moral to be intolerant to individuals who happen to have different sexual preferences? Are they moral for civil rights? Are they moral to take care of the poor? Are they moral to be prepared for disaster events for such as Katrina? Were they fiscally responsible? We have the largest deficit in history. In fact, the Chinese own our banknotes. They are basically our bank. I'm talking about the United States government. They bank the United States government. That is pretty sickening. Having a foreign country that is now your bank. That's how pathetic this administration and the previous Republican, or my underline Republican Congress, have placed ourselves in. So their policy is really basically of intolerance. And a Machiavellian elitism with their inquisition of religion, because it's their way or the highway, their imposition of what they believe are religiously correct. And like I say, the actions speak louder than words. You can speak morality, but it's really the actions of morality that really condescend. It's the way you act. It's not just what you say. You do things, and what those you do is really proof, what they say, proof in the pudding. And it's interesting that right now there's been a Pew reports that have, it's pretty interesting that are now saying that there are, just came out recently, another Pew report that there's 50% of Americans identify themselves as Democrats, and only 30% are now Republicans. That's a 20% switch within the last 6 years. Wow. I wonder if Americans have really woken up. Have they, you know, they bought into the Elmer Gundry lie? You know, you go in there and they say, hey, well, I'm going to save you. Just put your money here in this little basket and I'll surely take care of you. Yes, sir, Mr. Bush, thank you very much. He took care of him, all right. Isn't it ironic that the people that support him in the South, who created one of the largest devastations of the Katrina hurricanes, ironically, were even taken care of for the very people who supported him. So it's amazing that Americans have now, I think, evolved in waking up, which they do periodically. Just they have sometimes short memories. Somebody slap them in the head and keep that memory going. And they realize the seed of the Republicans. They realize the lies of the Mulkins, the O'Reillys, the Fox noise that's fumed out of the system and out through the airwaves, through the televisions and radio stations of lies and pure BS deceit. And listening to, you know, the lie and the ugly hatred of the likes of Ann Coulter, which maybe she's just suffering from her hormones from her sex change. Oops, I shouldn't make jokes about transsexuals. So what is the Republican Party? The Republican Party is basically a party with no ethics, no credibility. It's corrupt. It embraces cronyism and deception while being irresponsible, incompetent, and untrustworthy. And finally, it is an amoral entity. And I'm saying all Republicans. I'm saying the general theme of Republicans. Because there are generally really Republicans who have whole heart looking for an idea that they truly believe, but they're misguided. So I've made like a list of things so you can just see, and I wrote this in an article that was printed here in Las Vegas and also on several blog sites. And I just list a couple of examples of what the Republican administration or Republicans have done. In January of 2000, Richard Clark handed out a comprehensive plan to deal with Al-Qaeda to Bush, the Republican administration. In July 2000, George Tenet sends a memo to Rice, the National Security Advisor, to Bush, warning of an imminent attack by Al-Qaeda. In September 11th, of course, 2001, we were attacked. And today, according to the CIA, we are less secure. Al-Qaeda is stronger than before, and of course, Bin Laden is still at large. Oh yeah, and have you noticed in the news that the Taliban are still making their presence known in Afghanistan because the malfeasance and incompetence of Bush are placing our energies in Iraq. We should have been still in Afghanistan dealing with the Taliban. And then there's another thing. In January 2000, we had no federal deficit. That's right, folks. We were in the black. But today we are in the red with the largest deficit in history, and that's compliments to your fiscally responsible Republican Congress of the past and the president. And like I reiterate, China now holds our treasury notes. And like I said, they are our bank. And then we have the largest outsourcing of jobs in history and the greatest deficit, with China leading as amongst the traders. Oh yeah, according to Republicans, Americans don't like to work. Just remember that. So, and for the last 6 years, basically the Republican Congress, and last seven, or starting on the seven, Republican president, is basically the Republican Congress was the do-nothing Congress. And whatever happened to our healthcare situation? Oh yeah, they voted one that only lined the pockets of, and it was basically written by the insurance and pharmaceutical companies. Oh yeah, a Republican energy plan. Have you ever looked at your gas pumps? And where are we today? Are we so far behind on the energy issues that the Republicans and the president still have their heads stuck in the sand about global warming and going to alternative energy sources? I mean, they throw a little rhetoric, they do a little show and dance, so visit a study thing, but they haven't really changed the policy, because in a New York minute, we could change our energy situation. We have the technologies to switch, like, almost immediately. And that can be, you can verify that. And like I reiterate, the American Bar Association confirmed that Bush, speaking of impeachment again, had broke hundreds of laws, including the Foreign Surveillance Act, the unwarranted wire test, and there was never an oversight but this Republican rubber stamp Congress, including our lovely Senator John Ensign here, who just worried about getting his tan. Now, on immigration, under Republican Bush and this Congress, corporations have never been prosecuted for hiring illegal aliens. And then look what happened with securing our borders. We've had, even since 9/11, the largest influx of illegal aliens in history. And I don't blame the illegals coming into this country. You know, it's feast or famine. They're trying to just feed their families. They're looking for the best for their children. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. So the blame is really on that issue. If I'm talking about just one particular nation like Mexico, with taking responsibility dealing with their citizens, expecting a bailout by the Americans, they should take responsibility for their own citizens. But at the same token, where's the Republican administration? And where was the Republican Congress on dealing with this? And of course, as I said, regarding the war in Iraq, we were lied about everything. And the Republicans still lined up. Did you see them line up the other day behind Bush when the Senate, and both Congress and Senate of the Democrats, had voted in for a new budget, you know, fiscally banking or military, but setting a game plan, a framework for bringing back our troops out of Iraq, subject to what our military advises. And of course, I mentioned Katrina and cronyism. We don't know about that calamity. And the corruption that ran through, I don't want everybody forget the delay, the Nay, the Amaroff, the Cunninghams. I go on and on and on. So those are the lies of the Republicans and their constituents, the pundits, the Hannitys, the Malkins, the O'Reillys, the Fox Noise, and go on and on. Because they've been exposed to what they are. Even the most naive are now seeing the display of what they have seen what the real Republicans are, and what they have done, which is based, like I said, Machiavellianism. Are displaying in view their greed and dishonesty and cronyism and hypocrisy and corruption and malfeasance. And of course, we all know about the Foley situation that's not been in the news of late. You know, can you trust, I mean, come on, a pedophile in Congress and they knowingly knew about it? That's like backing the Catholic people, backing the Catholic Church. And what they did, and they still do, which is a whole other thing, talk about committing a crime. I think, isn't that obstruction of justice? And I don't understand why none of the church has been prosecuted. I'm talking not to those who actually were in hand, who actually did the gruesome, who were the molesters themselves. I'm talking those who I consider just as bad now of hiding the crime, of protecting the criminals, who knowingly harbored and protected these individuals who molested little boys and little girls, who fucking ruined their lives. I apologize for that word, but that sort of bothers me when I just think of what they did to those individuals. It's almost like giving them a death penalty to these little kids, who now they themselves for the rest of their lives they have to suffer with that experience of what they entrusted somebody who believed who was of high moral character in doing that to them. And then a church that was supposed to be representing Jesus Christ and hiding in that fact, that is a sad thing, but that's a whole nother thing. So anyway, the Republican Party, it's just basically, like I said, an amoral party. Because there are lies. I can go right down the list. I just did it. I just wish every American with common sense remembers day in, day out, every time they go in the voting booth, every time a situation arises, there are lies and deceit. And just like now, Bush will say, I'm vetoing that bill. Because, and those Democrats are trying to stop paying, taking care. They don't care about our soldiers, so they don't want to pay for send monies to our soldiers. They don't care about soldiers. I think they do. They want to bring them back alive and not in boxes. That's how much they care. That's how much they care about our military. That they want to make sure there's funds and. Things like Walter Reed don't happen, and take care of our soldiers when they come out of service and back home, that not only their health is taken care of, but their welfare as well, and they're psychologically taken care of, and they don't come back in boxes or in pieces, missing an arm, an eye, or a leg, or half a brain. I think that's somebody who really cares, especially not that they're defending our borders, not that they're defending us over there, because that's not fighting terrorists. Terrorists are amongst the Taliban. Terrorists are even coming out of Saudi Arabia. The terrorists are coming out of Pakistan. The terrorists are in Gaza. The terrorists are in Lebanon, which is, like I said before, it was a whole new root of hatred. And to fight the hatred, you have to go from the, not just put a Band-Aid over the sore, you have to get to the very root of the situation. So now I want to get into what I label is called spiritual responsibility. And what I mean by spiritual responsibility, I'm referring to, it starts off at choice. And what is choice? Well, what's that have to do with spirit? Well, I mean, if you read in Bereshit, in Genesis, in the very beginning of the Bible, the very separation of man, when he received from the apple, he created the knowledge of right and good, and evil and bad. He knew the difference of going, making a choice. He now had choice. So it wasn't a negative thing. It was never a bad thing that Eve got the apple. Okay, come on, Adam, eat the apple. It was a good thing. It was never a negative thing. In fact, spiritually, man's soul has the potential of having a higher vibration than angels, in effect. Yep, that's right. Man's soul has the potential to have a higher vibration than even the angels. And people go, oh, come on, the angels? Raphael, Michal, Melton, and all of them? Come on. Yeah. Angels don't have choice. They just do. They're like little, you know, little worker bees working on that level. Man has choice. That's what separated us from the animals. Our souls, we made choice. And we make that choice in every framework, from the spiritual side to the very very essence where we decide to buy even with our own money, to decisions on our relationships. But where are these choices emulate? Where do they start off from? Well, let me go backtrack. We do reincarnate. When you die, your soul, and I'm going to go into the very particulars of what happens with your soul, excuse me, but when your soul is up above into, and I'm using above, it's just a more of a description, because you're basically, your energy is, your soul is energy. And when you decide to come back into a particular embodiment, you choose that embodiment. That's right, you choose that embodiment. You choose to be that child. You then choose that life. That's right, you choose that life. What happens basically, it's almost like if you look at a watercolor chart thing, you know, one of those watercolor paintings with all the little numbers, colored by numbers. Well, basically, that you choose that life. It's all laid out. And there's, of course, pathways go individual ways. Like if you choose this way, it goes that way, and that, and so on. And it's basically that. And there are karmic events set in motion, too, that maybe it's almost like a wave pushing you in that direction, which I'll get into. But basically, you've chosen. So I used to, like, joke with my daughter, you chose me. I didn't choose you, basically. But your children have chose the parents. Yes. And I don't want to sound condescending or cold, but that really is, you know, you choose those situations. And as bad as being a victim to certain situations or life events, those are sort of karmic events that have been chosen for learning lessons, to learn to grow from or to relate to. And that's where I was talking about the color chart. You move into that color chart, and then you decide, well, I'm going to make it red or blue or green or yellow. And then on that color chart, on that path, you make a right turn, left turn, straight ahead, backwards, forwards. You decided to go where that direction of that path leads to you. Well, it leads to a new path. So it's the essence, basically, of choices. Those, every layer of choices creates a new path, which creates you to a new event, which creates you to a new experience. So those choices lead into experiences upon experiences. And your reaction to those experiences are then choices. Give you an example. Somebody grows up and his life experience, he's put into poverty. And he's living the worst life you can imagine. Oh, my God. And he's black, too. Which is another negative in this society, is being a person of color, let's say. Because now he has less opportunities left for him. And what would be his reaction to those situations, that soul? What would his reactions be? Those would be his choices. Now, he can turn, make a positive turn and try to overcome those events and overcome, not react with anger. He can go rob a store, rape a woman, beat up an elderly, sell crack around the corner, become a gangbanger. That would be his other choice. He can take the other choice and from those experiences and move forward and above that and endure those experiences, those hardships, bringing him a greater character, learning to evolve, Because this lifetime is very short. It's quick. Because then you go die and you come back and you do, you try to re-heal. Our whole process is to constantly heal our vibrator, ourselves, and to reach a higher vibration with our own cell levels, and therefore move up to another level. So those are choices. We all have choices. The other choice would be another way. Let's say I decided to come down, and now I'm in a rich family. I want to have it really good. I'm in part of the Rothschild family, or the I'm part of the Rockefellers. You know? Or I'm a part of Hugh Hefner's crowd. What do I do with that now? I'm now in that family. I'm a little kid growing up rich and famous and all this money, like a Paris Hilton. Now, what would there be a reaction? A negative reaction is pure gluttony. I buy another five Ferraris, and then I'll slam against the wall and see what happens. Suck down so many drugs because I can do it. Do whatever I want. Buy whatever I want. Don't even give a flying F about anybody else. Just be as narcissistic as possible. Because all I care about myself. That would be one choice. The other choice would be, which I highly respect is like Angelina Jolie, what she's doing with her opportunities. And trying to help those who are not in their in a good situation, like in Africa or in other countries, trying to help people who are not basically inherited a beneficial situation, who are a little who grew up with their bellies blowing up because they haven't eaten any food in their entire life. I mean, a normal meal. Those would be something of good. That would be Oprah. Hell, look at what she did. She went from war situation, a very bad situation, and she made choices. She consistently, even though there's negatives, who knows what, I don't get into the particulars of her life, but what she's doing now, with all what she has behind her, she went and made schools for girls in Africa. I commend her. She went and tried to re-put back into society to heal others. Now that she's taken care of and she has all the millions of girls, she should be using all her speech and helping those who have never, who unfortunately haven't had that situation. That is really bringing light in this situation. That's bringing love in this situation. That's part of choice too. So life is full of choices. And here we go back. In politics, the same situation. Everything's in choice. Politics, religion, it's all choice. If you choose to subjugate yourself to a leader and allow that leader to do those things, who are we to say, are we any better? We just allow those things. For example, Bush became president. And how he became president. It was a choice to allow him to be that. You didn't see people banging on the streets. You didn't see Americans get all frazzled over it. They made a choice of apathy. That's a choice. Not caring is a choice. And then when 9/11 happened, that was, let's say, a karmic event. Some things happen and we're shown events in front of us. And it's our choice to what we react to those events. That's a choice. And how we choose on that event creates a new karmic situation. So how did we, what did we choose? What happened after 9/11? Immediately, a great reaction. Americans realized it didn't matter if you're black, white, yellow, green, yellow, purple, what religion you are, Jew, Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, or whatever. Everybody died in that building. It was indiscriminate. It didn't matter. And people united. And then the president at the time, Bush, had his choice to become probably one, like I said in a prior show, could have had the opportunity of being one of the greatest presidents. Here's his choice, Mr. President. Here you are. Instead of uniting, it's now his way or the highway. Instead of having the world look upon America as amber of light, destined to look up to, we became the ugly American. We start pushing our weight around in the wrong way. You know, one great president had said, speak softly and carry a big stick. Speak softly and carry, you can have this, he had the stick of a thread behind him, but he would speak softly, meaning he would be very diplomatic in carrying out his things. Oh yeah, that was the original Republican, Theodore, good old Teddy Roosevelt. That was his choice. This is what he could have done. And then after 9/11, he could have really prepared the country fiscally, responsibly, security-wise. And when Clinton was using all his might and his energies to create peace within the Middle East, particularly with the Palestinians and Israelis, and was on that very threshold, what was the choices there? Everybody has choices. There are no victims. There are only volunteers. That's why you can't really go, those poor little Palestinians, they don't have their situation, or the Israelis, look at their situation. There were choices made on both sides, and they need to take responsibility for their choices. That's why I talk about spiritual choices. You know, it's coming up to Passover. And as people don't know what Passover is. It's, you know, dealing with Jews leaving, or then Hebrews leaving Egypt. You know, the whole story of Moses and the Exodus. But what was that really about? In Hebrew, Egypt is really called Mitzrayim. And what's Mitzrayim? Mitzrayim means confinement. They were in there confined, their slavery, enslaved. So when they left, they had, all of a sudden they had choices. They can choose when to eat, when to live. They're free. As free people, you have free thought. Free thought, you have choice. You have the responsibility of the choices. And this is what happens. People withdraw and they want to go back to a slavery mentality. That means they want to be slave to get bling bling. Slave to hatred, slavery to anger, slavery to their alcohol, slavery to, I gotta have that, smoke that bong, slavery to being in relationships that are purely bad, like very codependent or abusive. Those are just slaves you don't want to move away from. It feels more comfortable. Well, most people feel that security blanket of slavery. Because when you go leave that, you're out there and free, in the wild almost. You feel, oh my God, I'm naked. I have to make choices. I have to take responsibility. I can't do that. I'd rather somebody take those responsibilities away from me so I can feel enslaved. And I don't have to make those choices. But then realize they've just made a choice. We've given up we are enslaved when we give up our choices with what's happening in our government. That's an enslavement. When we give up our rights, when we give up our civil rights, that's a choice. That's a choice of enslavement, allowing the government to dictate to you. Because it feels more secure, they can take care of me. Oh boy. It's a secure, also a way of blaming. Instead of taking responsibility, when billions of dollars goes to, for example, Yasser Arafat, billions of dollars go to Yasser Arafat to take care of the Palestinian people, to have schools and build up factories and roads, and everyone would be taken care of financially, and they'd have a state. A viable state needs to have economical security. What do you do with it? Put it in his pocket, send it to France where his wife was, so be it, and take care of all his little cronies amongst the Fatah and all the Ashraf. And then play the hate game. Hate the Jew, because I just stole from you. Hamas does the same thing. Hate the Jew, because I now get my money from the Saudis and now from the Iranians. It's the hate game, the stealing game. So what are the choices made of that? When the Israelis, for example, moved out, there was a choice amongst Palestinians to basically, I voted for the Hamas to put them in power. That was a choice. Now they have to take responsibility of their choice. There's a responsibility when setting up bombs in Tel Aviv, the reaction to that, more security. Israelis can implement. And then there's the choice of the other side. And so for the Israelis, you know, there's point of security and there's point of being, saying things, doing things maliciously, expanding, one thing, expanding a settlement, then building a new one. That's a bad choice. That's a choice. So there's choices create reactions, and there's responsibility to those choices. And that every situation in your life today, choices. Fear, by the way, is an illusion. If you choose to fear, you're choosing an illusion. We have choices to perceive things as well. We can always see the good in things. We can always see the negative things. Those are choices. So remember, everything is choice. We choose. You choose to feed yourselves. You got to take responsibility. Pretend in our own society like the blame and feel the responsibility for our own action on somebody else. If we have coffee and we buy this hot coffee in McDonald's and spill it on ourselves like a bunch of idiots, then we go and sue McDonald's because of the coffee burned us. But did McDonald's spill the coffee on you? Whose choice? Who's taking responsibility? When you know something's bad for you and you're putting it in your mouth consistently, whether it's fattening ice cream or smoking cigarettes, I don't care what anybody says, those are choices. You can't just blame the tobacco companies. No one twisted your arm and stick that cigarette in your mouth when you first did it. Yeah, it's addictive, but who bent your arm to make that choice? You took the choice. There's responsibility. But we tend to throw those responsibilities on other people instead of taking the responsibility of our own choices. That's a spiritual wrong. And what happens when we don't take responsibility for those choices, we tend to repeat those. And like I said, when we consistently come back to a new next life and the next life, if the lesson we haven't learned today, we will learn the next lifetime. And sometimes if you don't learn it this lifetime, we'll learn it again. Look what happens in relationships. Have you noticed a lot of people who have had abusive relations tend to go back into abusive relationships? Like there are women I know who have a boyfriend who beat the hell out of them. Next thing you know, they marry to another one who beats the hell out of them. And then goes to the next one who beats the hell out of them. The same cycle. Or the person who gets into a very codependent relationship. To the alcohol, marries an alcoholic or a drug addict. And lives in that situation consistently the same old thing. So it's a matter of choice and responsibility, choices. My own lifetime, I look back, there are choices, some choices you regret. Yeah, because, you know, if you look the Monday night quarterback and you look back, I would have never made that choice. I would have done something different. But that's then and now, and you learn from those. That's part of learning. That's part of growing. Then you go, wow, now I know not to do that again. Now I know that if I put my hand in that fire, it gets hot. How many times do you need to learn that? a lot of people don't understand. They keep on sticking their hand in the fire. They keep running into that wall. And some events are karmic, like I said before about riding the wave. Live the life of like a surfer. Catch that wave, and the wave will take you where your life is going. If you fight the wave, what happens? If you're on a board and you're fighting that wave, you'll flip over on your board. You won't stay on your board, and you get drowned. But that wave will still push you forward, whether you like it or not. That's part of the karma. That's part of the life choice that you've already granted yourself to go forward. And you've chosen that wave to go on, that particular wave. So if you look at it like a surfer, your life is really like a surfer. You're on a wave, and you're taking it to the beach, and to another wave, and another wave. And they're like keep on pushing you toward your destined area, but based upon your choices as well. So there's two events that are happening, your karmic events and your choices. And your karmic events are from choices from the past and choices that you intended in the future, because they're basically one and the same. This is a whole other issue of time, it's an element of time. Time is not linear. Time is always happening. You can leap in time, go back in time, future time. So, life is choices. And life is full of responsibilities of those choices and those endeavors and what we decide to choose upon those. And like they said, it includes from politics to religion. You know, it's like I mentioned before, even in scriptures, people had choices. You know, when great prophets such as Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, Moses, Daniel, Ezekiel, Isaiah, and Dao Tse Tung, and Confucius, and on and on and on. But they all presented something. They all presented theologies. They presented ideas. And what was the choices made out of those ideas? Those are choices and responsibilities. Every choice that you make is your historical input that affects your life toward the future, and not just your physical life, but your spiritual life, because it is a spiritual responsibility. Your choice is spiritual responsibility. So like I said, there's no victims. There's only volunteers. And I know that sounds pretty callous. People go, oh my God. I mean, when I was raped, when I was a little girl and I got raped and all that stuff. I didn't volunteer for him to do that. I'm really sorry to say. But that's a karmic. Those some things are karmic. And it's really hard to say certain things happen when you see somebody die in front of you. A lot of those are really karmic, and your actions in dealing with them, the emotional things that you have to deal with from that event, as bad as they are, as hard things are hard for certain people, those reactions, those choices that you react to is your own opportunity for growth. You don't grow from things all mushy and going really good. You grow from things that are presented in front of you that are obstacles. You don't, like if you go on a weight set and you're working in working out, if you work out very lightweight and doesn't make your arm any stronger, when you put a little bit more weight, that's what makes you stronger. It's the same thing as your character and your true spirit. And a lot of those people who go through those very hardships are actually because they spiritually have the opportunity to evolve in a greater magnitude. And if you look at that, a lot of the great spiritual leaders have gone through many very great hardships and maybe present one lifetime in order to make choices to grow in their own vibration. I mean, Nelson Mandela, what he went through. Martin Luther King, what he went through. The Jews who saw their parents and their families wiped out in the Holocaust. the Native Americans who saw Sand Crete and were had their culture and land and everything yanked from them and were brutally murdered to Darfur, to Kosovo, to Tibet, which today is being occupied by China. And all the people who have consistently been suffered in whatever situation, whether it's in the South Central LA or East LA or Harlem or some bad part of Chicago, I don't know if you're familiar with Chicago, or whatever city you live in and you're enduring hardships, or whether you're in Africa and Sudan. Spiritually, on a spiritual level, those are opportunities for growth. As bad as they are, as hard as they are, I shouldn't use the word bad because it's really not bad, as hard as they are, the hardships. Because in reality, in the real sense of spirituality, those were chosen. Those life events were chosen to occur. Those paths were chosen. So though, therefore, that's choice. And we all make choices in our every moment, every second of our lives that creates the path, which creates our responsibility. So, with all that and undo, I want to also thank all of you for listening. And you can always check my, and that's in now and also in the future archives. I want to thank BBS Radio for having me, having my show. And you all can check out my website, andrewfeder.com, F-E-D-E-R. And you can check out about me as well as my book, When the Angels Have Risen, some of which I have spoken about within my book. And I want to thank everybody. And with all that, peace and love throughout. And praise be God, Allah and Elohim. And maybe there will be peace with the Middle East and all around the world as well. And thank you.